What is up, Wiz fans? Welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today we have a very special episode, the first annual Wizards Teddy Awards. The Teddy Awards, basically seasonal awards, going to be talking about, you know, team MVP, going to be talking some fun awards, you know, like best performance, worst performance, most disappointing player. If you don't know, the Teddy Awards, named after the Wizards' terrific and beloved owner, Ted Leonsis. Definitely not joking when I say that. And yeah, basically going to give out a Teddy Award to each, not to each player, but for certain categories. We got about 15 to 16 different awards. Half of them are pretty serious. Half are fun, kind of poking fun at some players, some performances, some really bad roster moves. Stuff like that, trying to make it a fun episode, you know, to bring what was a very tumultuous and brutal season to an end in a fun way. So, you know, hopefully you enjoy. And I'm gonna do these season awards, and then at the end I'll talk a little bit about, you know, some off-season outlook, where the Wizards are in terms of their pick and in terms of free agency and certain stuff like that, some housekeeping stuff at the end. But I don't want to hold you too long without getting into it. So we're first gonna talk about some of the more serious awards, and then towards the end I'll get to some of the more fun awards. But look, first we're gonna start right off rip with team MVP, okay? And I gave team MVP to Deni Avdija. Deni Avdija doesn't average as many points as Jordan Poole or Kyle Kuzma, you know, doesn't average as many assists as Tyus Jones or as many rebounds as some of the bigger guys on the team, but he was the most consistent Wizard this season. 75 games played. All of those are starts. 14.7 points per game. 7 rebounds per game. Almost 4 assists per game. Shot 50% from the field and 37.5 from 3. Which, if he didn't have a pretty down month at the end of the season, would have been above 40% from 3. And even at 37.5%, that's still 6% above what he had shot in his best season before this at 31%. So career highs across the board for Deni Avdija. And look, if you take his stats post Wes Unseld Jr., I believe he's around 18 points, 8.5 rebounds per game, which is unbelievable. An incredible jump. He was averaging 9 points per game last season, and he nearly doubled that when Brian Keefe was the head coach. So you got to kind of take it at face value. These numbers would be so much higher if he had a head coach that was utilizing the right way throughout the entire season, and not just from late January until where we are right now in mid-April. But Deni Avdija improved in every facet of the game. Three-point shot, needed to improve it. He did. It looks great. He figured out when he puts a shoulder into a defender and gets downhill, it's virtually unstoppable. When he gets the rebound, he just tore, like, that's why he's named Turbo. He just goes on the break. Either gets to the rim or finds an open teammate. As you saw, his passing has been so much improved. In that second to last game, he almost had a triple-double when he started at point guard. And on top of all that, he's an A-plus defender. Terrific defender. Hasn't fouled as much as he used to. Can stick him on one of the best players on the opposing team and know that he's gonna do his best to lock him down. Just such a terrific, consistent, improved season from Deni Avdija. And that's why I got him as my team MVP. He brought it every game. I knew what I could expect. And he surprised me in terms of how good he can be offensively on top of his defense already, and how well he shoots the three now that he's improved that jumper. So look, I could talk about Deni, as you guys know, for a while, but Deni Avdija is my team MVP for this season. He was the best player and the most consistent player on both ends of the floor for the Wizards this entire season. That's why I've given him the first Teddy for team MVP. Moving on to our second award, and that is most improved player. This goes to a guy that not the scoring jump maybe you'd see from typical, you know, most improved players. It's only a 2 points per game jump in 2022-23 at 11 points, now at 13.2 points in 23-24. But this goes to Corey Kispert. And look, Corey Kispert, easily the most consistent Wizard off the bench this season, started pretty much a fourth of the games, especially towards the latter part of the season when a lot of the guards, Shaman and Jones, were out. But the improvement that I saw wasn't necessarily statistical. It was if you watch Corey Kispert last year and then you watched him this year, his ability to drive the ball, unbelievably better. His finishing ability, the way he shields off the defenders and uses his body, you could tell he worked on his finishing over the summer. His cutting is top-notch, easily the best on the Wizards, possibly one of the best in the league. Just so smart and so timely with those cuts. And just the way he could score at all three levels. We know he can shoot from three. Again, another season of shooting nearly 40% from three. We know that he can hit a mid-range shot when he's open. But again, the ability to get to the rim and finish through contact and the float game that he added. There are so many things that you wanted Corey Kispert to improve on. And he did it. And he talked about, when I talked to him at Media Day, he talked about, I want to be a better defender. And that doesn't mean that he needs to be all NBA. But he wants at the end of the games where, you know, it's not offense and defensive swaps. So he comes in to play offense and they take him out because he's a liability on defense. He didn't want that. And he did it. He did it enough this season to where I'd be comfortable keeping him in at the end of the game. Now, if it's him or Bilal, obviously you have that luxury. I'm putting Bilal in for defense and then putting Corey in for offense. And that's fine. But even when Bilal went down, I still didn't mind him playing late in games, and I didn't see him as that defensive liability that we used to see in the past. So, look, he got better at driving, finishing, defending, added a float game, still shot it well from three. Just so many improvements in so many categories that if you look at his stats, it's a 2 points per game difference. Rebounds are the same. Shot a little worse from three, but if you actually watch the games, he passed that eye test and he got better in so many different facets of the game. And I'm very excited to see what he can do in the future. You know, if he gets a bigger role next season, especially if he's starting. So that's the most improved player. That's the MVP down right there. And that's your two draft picks, your two lottery picks that are still on the team from the Tommy Shepard era. So look, we give Tommy Shepard a lot of shit for his roster moves that failed or not making certain roster moves, trading Brad, but he made some decent picks. I mean, Rui's balling in LA as well, so I got to give him a little bit of credit. And look, moving on to Defensive Player of the Year, I had trouble doing this just because this player is no longer the team, but I gave it to Daniel Gafford, you know, an honorary Teddy Award to a guy that's no longer on the team, but this honestly, this is an award that has been deserved the last 3 years. He's been the best defender on this team ever since he got here, pretty much, and especially this season from October, the beginning of the year, until mid-February when he got traded. He was the anchor of the defense. Everything was funneled to him, and he did everything to make this team not the worst defensive team of all time. I mean, without Daniel Gafford, this team would have given up 140 a game, and they gave up 115 to 120 a game, but he was the one that saved those points. And I get he's no longer with the team, and you could have given this to Bilal, and Bilal would have been deserving of it, but Daniel Gafford, even in his limited time here, you have to acknowledge how great he was on that side of the ball. I mean, the Wizards' defense is, apart from Bilal and Denny, like, the guards, it was terrible, and everything would be fondled into the paint, and Daniel Gafford was there to save the day, and without him, it would have been absolutely terrible. So you got to give respect and credit where it's due, even if he's traded. He was easily the best player on the team. He could have gotten traded 2 months into the season, and he still would have been the best player this season for the Wizards. Made the most defensive impact. And it also helps that he's a great dude. I mean, fan favorite. Everyone loves him. I'm pulling for Dallas and Dan in the playoffs just because I have so much respect for who he is as a human being and as a player. So Daniel Gafford gets the first annual Teddy for Defensive Player of the Year. And it's well deserved. I don't care that he's not on the team anymore. He was dominant when he was here, protecting the rim, and he deserves this award. So that's Depoy, Daniel Gafford, MVP, Denny Avdia, Most Improved Player, Corey Kispert. Then we go to Rookie of the Year. And this was a one-horse race, obviously, for the majority of the season. And had Vucevic been here from the start, it could have been a lot tighter, obviously. But, you know, 5 to 6 games of real minutes is too small of a sample size for me to go out here and even say that Vucevic could compete. And look, Vucevic's counting stats are probably better than Bilal's, and Vucevic was terrific down the stretch, but the overall course of the season, the overall play of Bilal throughout a longer period, obviously edges him out over Vucevic for the Rookie of the Year award on the team.
And look, this isn't just like, okay, you're in your first year of the season. It's your first year on the Wizards is what I'm talking about. And obviously I'm talking about more young players, but Bilal deserves this award, and 8 points, four rebounds per game, nearly one block and one steal. That's not gonna jump off the page. But he, I mean, 7 games of 15-plus points, 2 20-point games, the one against Boston at home, one at Brooklyn where he hit six threes. What Bilal was able to do guarding pretty much the best player on the opposing team the majority of the time in your rookie season when you are, I think, 18 or 19 years old, and 19 now, is so impressive. And it's not like he's just guarding him because of his length and size and all that. He's a really good defender. And he made it difficult for a lot of players, really good contests, and he's only going to get better as he gets smarter on the defensive end, and he adds a little more to that three-point shot and offensive game. But look, Bilal's there defensively. I think he's good enough defensively where I feel comfortable sticking him on the best player on the opposing team. Now, offensively, I thought he was going to be a liability. I thought the shot wouldn't be anywhere near where you'd like it to be, and I thought he'd be very limited on that end. But he proved me wrong. I mean, the shot looked really good. I think he shot 43% from, like, the left corner and, like, 38% from the right corner. Obviously, he kind of fell off towards the end of the season, and that's that rookie wall. I'm sure he hasn't played more than, like, 30 to 32 games in a season, and now he's playing a full 82. That's going to put some strain on your body and your mind and all that. On top of all the travel, it's that rookie wall that you hear about a lot, and he hit that at 18 years old. And look, he got that wrist injury, and that sucks. But I saw so much good from Bilal in what's supposed to be a project and what's going to take 4 to 5 years to grow. It looked like, you know, maybe he would be in year two or year three as far as how far along he is in that development, because that's how impressed I was with what I saw. So much potential, so much upside, and that's what's really intriguing about him, and that's why he was picked so high. And look, I think Bleacher Report did a redraft, an NBA redraft of 2023, and Bilal went 6, which is a pick higher than he originally went at 7, eventually traded back to 8 for the Wizards. But that's improvement, and only 63 games, averaging 8-4. For you to move up with those numbers, you're clearly doing something right, especially defensively. And look, Bilal's only going to get better. So don't look at his counting stats. He's so much more than that. If you watch Bilal play an ounce of basketball, you could see how much upside he has. So that's why Bilal gets the Rookie of the Year nod. Vucevic definitely play. If he played a full season, would have competed for it. And that's a good problem to have, having two rookies that you really like really intrigue you. But nonetheless, very impressed and pleased, and so excited to see what Bilal can do. Hopefully. I think that wrist should be healed by July for Summer League, because that's where I really want to see him play, especially Vooch too. But great first season in DC. Hopefully the first of many for Bilal. So that brings us that's the main award that you'd see in the NBA. Obviously, I can't do all NBA first team and second team for the Wizards. That's not going to happen. But these are the main awards. Coach of the Year goes to anyone not named Wes Unseld Jr. You could have literally put anybody in the interim. You could have put G Wiz in the interim head coach job, and he would have won this award over Wes Unseld Jr. If you didn't see the article ESPN put out about the Wizards rebuild, great quotes in there from a lot of players and Michael Winger and Will Dawkins, but mainly the ones that stuck out were from Jordan Poole, and so many of the comments just made it. And I don't want to put words in Jordan Poole's mouth, but it made it seem like the team just had a lighter vibe, and everyone was just happy to move on from Wes. A lot of players didn't feel like they were being utilized the right way. It was kind of stale. They all knew they were losing, and they all knew they weren't getting anywhere, and there was no compete, and there was no fire in the team. It was just, all right, who are we going to lose to tonight? And I think that all changed with Brian Keefe, and you saw that in the exit interviews the players did. I think Tyus Jones just said you could feel in the locker room, you know, we competed so much more. Aku said, you know, they really enjoyed playing for him. It's just night and day. And I don't think Brian Keefe is a world champion head coach at this time, and he very well could be, but it just shows how poor Wes Unseld Jr. was as a head coach. And I mean, you can be annoyed that they picked up his option and they waited too long, because every Wizards fan, myself at the forefront, said he should have been fired at the end of last season. 2 years in, you have two pretty competent squads, and you can't even make the play-in tournament with either of them. You're clearly the problem. And they tried to make it work with a rebuilding team, and it was never going to work. So I mean, it took too long, but better late than never. Move on. So that's why the coach of the year goes to anybody not named Wes Unseld Jr. It could go to Brian Keefe. It could not go to Brian Keefe. Could go to David Vanderpool. I don't know. Just not Wes. And so that moves us on from the main awards. I'm going to do a couple more of these series. There's three left. And then we'll go on to some of the more fun awards. So best performance of the season. This goes to Denny Avdia's 43-point night at New Orleans right before the All-Star break. This was frustrating because it was right before a big, week and a half break where, you would like to see Denny just get another one right after this and build on it. But this is exactly what you expected when you drafted Denny Avdia. You don't think this is going to happen in year one or year two, not even year three. But year four, year five, he's going to be putting up huge numbers, stuffing the stat sheet in terms of rebounds, hopefully knocking down threes. This was the culmination of everyone that had still maintained belief in Denny through all of those 0 to 5 point nights where he missed three open layups and fouled out with six fouls, couldn't hit a three to save his life. This is why you hold on to a guy like this and maintain trust. Denny Avdia, stat line at New Orleans right before All-Star break, 43 points, 15 rebounds, three assists, 6 of 10 from three. And that's against New Orleans, one of the best defenses in the league. Denny just torched him, got to the basket at will, knocked down his threes. He was incredible. Absolutely incredible. The 15 rebounds, helping on the glass is another thing. Using his size at 6'9". Just such a complete performance. The best I've ever seen Denny play. Honestly, it might have been the best individual performance, like I said, for any Wizard this season. I can't tell you a time Kuz had a performance like this in the last 3 years. Jordan Poole had a couple great ones, but I don't think they were anything like Denny Avdia's. So I just can't say enough. This was the breakout game for Denny, and this was, I think, when the season really shifted for him. And he averaged, like I said, almost 20 and 8 over the last 3 months of the season with Brian Keefe, 2, 3 months of the season. And this was really the tipping point. So best performance of the season goes to Denny's 43 ball at New Orleans. Obviously couldn't come out with a win, but you made it close at the end with a decent comeback, and your team's terrible around you. So it's not like, you have to win for it to be best performance. Now, move on to worst performance. And as you would expect in a 15 and 67 season, on a rebuilding team, there's going to be a lot of worst performances to choose from. A lot more worst performances than best performances, that's for sure. But the worst performance goes to Patrick Baldwin Jr. versus Miami. And this was, I think, about like 5, 6 games ago. So towards the end of the season. And I want to preface this by saying after this game, I'm pretty sure PBJ averaged like 15 and 8 over the last 4 or 5 games. So this does not define PBJ season, and I still hold Patrick Baldwin Jr. stock. I just have to say that. But nonetheless, against Miami at home, 0 points, 0 assists, 3 rebounds, 1 turnover, 0 of 8 from the floor, and I'm pretty sure all 8 were threes. So settling and not even using his size at 6'10", 3 fouls, -14 on the night. Just basically doing cardio out there and maybe grabbing a few rebounds while he's at it, a couple fouls while he's at it. He was really struggling, and this was the culmination of about 3 to 4 game stretch where his shot was flat and he was fouling all over the place, not in the right spots offensively or defensively. And I think that really flipped the switch for him. Like, I might be out of the league pretty soon. I gotta figure this shit out. And look, credit to him. The last 3 to 4 games of the season, like I said, 15 points, 7 or 8 rebounds, a couple double doubles in there as well. I think 2 double doubles. So, got to give credit where it's due. Had the worst performance of the season, bounced back in a big way. And an honorable mention here is Jordan Poole in that home game versus the Cavs. It was like 0 points on 0 of 7 from the field, 0 of 3 from 3, couple turnovers. One of his worst performances. Then he turned around against the Cavs the second time at home, and I think he dropped almost 40. So again, you like to see both of those guys have good comebacks, performances after some of the worst performance of the season. But worst performance easily goes to Patrick Baldwin Jr.'s 0.0 of 8 from the field, -14 game against Miami. So that leaves us with one final serious award, and that's actually no, there's a couple more. The best win at Miami, obviously Miami fully healthy for the most part. And Bam, Jimmy, Duncan Robinson. I don't know if they had Tyler Hero at this point. He might have been hurt, but nonetheless, pretty much fully healthy Miami team against the Wizards without any of their centers. So no Bagley, no Holmes, and Vucevic wasn't over by that point. So Ku started at center, and they went into Miami, a team that was, in that 7-8 range, fighting for a playoff spot, and they just killed them. And Miami made a comeback at the end, but it was pretty much dominated by Washington all game, held the lead for pretty much the whole game. They did everything possible to blow the game at the end. Kyle Kuzma was a big part of that. But nonetheless, they came out with a huge win at Miami, a team that they had no business beating. A team, they had just won a game, I think, at home against Charlotte. So the streak ended at 16 games lost in a row. You beat Charlotte at home. You go on the road to Miami, and you could easily phone it in. You're like, all right, we won our game. Fuck it. Who cares? But you go into Miami, and you give probably one of the best performances of the season. Take away a win against a really good team, and that's easily my favorite game. And look, the Milwaukee win at home was obviously great, but no Dame Lillard. I think Milwaukee was on the second night of a back-to-back, so although it was very impressive to basically lead wire to wire, I think the win on the road at Miami without any available center is easily the most impressive win, especially that Brian Keefe earned in his short tenure here. That moves us on to the worst loss, and that is at Memphis with I'm pretty sure like 11 guys on the Memphis injury report at that time. Basically, he started a G League lineup plus Luke Kennard, and just like you would expect, the Wizards went in there thinking they were tough shit, even though they were the second worst team in the league. I think actually at that time the worst team in the league. And they thought that shit was sweet against Memphis, and they got blitzed. They were down like 20 at the end of the first quarter. They made a comeback, but Brian Keefe, again, a bad call by him here, decided to go back to the starters, even though pretty much Poole, Denny, and the bench got them back in the game, and then the starters fell apart. So that's the worst loss to a terrible Memphis team. I mean, look, credit to Memphis for competing, but the Wizards just phoned it in. You can't fucking do that when you're the worst team in the league. Like, what do you expect to happen? You have 10 wins in your first 60 games, and you think you can go into Memphis and fucking destroy a team that has a better record than you and has dealt with way more injuries than you. It was a really low point in the season losing that game. And then lastly, this is the last of the serious Teddy Awards. This is the most disappointing player this season. And that goes to Ryan Rollins. And Ryan Rollins was obviously part of that Jordan Poole trade package, and him and PBJ were throw-ins to a lot of people. But I liked Rollins coming out of Toledo as a point guard in the draft. I liked Ryan Rollins in his G League minutes when I'd watch him against the Go-Go. And I liked Ryan Rollins when he played for the Wizards. What you saw from Jared Butler at the end of the season, that's what I thought we'd be seeing from Ryan Rollins in those extended minutes. However, Ryan Rollins decided that he'd rather steal shampoo from Target, allegedly. I don't want to get sued here. I don't know the legality of it, or if he was like convicted or whatever. But allegedly, Ryan Rollins stole a shampoo and other items from Target, didn't want to pay for them on his $4 to $5 million per year salary for some reason, and the Wizards decided to move on from him. So that was disappointing for sure. A guy that I thought had a lot of upside as a really talented ball handler at point guard, eventually cut mid-season before we could really see what he has. I think he got signed by the Bucks, if I recall, but nonetheless, just disappointed to see how that run ended. I thought it would definitely go a lot differently. Obviously, I can't predict that Ryan Rollins is going to steal shampoo, allegedly, from Target, but disappointing to see that his Wizards career has to end on that term. So that does it for some of the main, really serious awards. I'll give a quick breakdown. MVP goes to Denny Avdia. Pretty much a 15-7 season, career highs across the board, nearly 38% from three, just terrific. Corey Kispert, MIP, improved his driving, finishing, defending, and float game. Just a really solid sophomore campaign for, or sorry, third campaign for Corey Kispert. And then DPOY, not on the team anymore, but Daniel Gafford, just because he was so dominant for the first couple months of the season, have to give him some reward, give him his flowers. Hopefully he does well with the Mavs in the playoffs. Bilal gets Rookie of the Year. This is really a one-horse race, and towards the end, maybe two with Vooch, but so impressed with his upside, his defense, and how far along his offensive game is compared to what I thought it would be when he was drafted. Best performances is Denny's 43 ball at NOLA. Worst performance, PBJ's 0.0 of 8 shooting performance against Miami. Most disappointing player, Ryan Rollins, for all of the off-court stuff leading to his wave. Best win at Miami and worst loss at Memphis. So that's a rundown of the more serious awards. And now this is my favorite part of the Teddy Awards. These are the more fun awards that we can kind of, laugh at after a really tumultuous season. Just kind of go out here and have some fun. So without further ado, I'm gonna kick it off with one of my favorite awards, the Teddy for Bradley Beal Worst Contract of the Year award, goes to Bradley Beal. Very happy for Brad. This is his third year running winning this award. And look, very well deserved. Bradley Beal making $51+ million over the next 3 years. But my favorite part about this award this season, as opposed to the last couple, is that the Wizards aren't paying it. The Phoenix Suns are. And they're paying it because Bradley Beal was traded to the Suns, and he's now their problem financially. And look, all the best to Brad. He's killing it. He had 35 in their game to, avoid the play-in. But look, if you want to pay Bradley Beal $51 million a year so that you could barely squeak out of the play-in in the West, fine by me. It shows me that the Suns' current core is not sustainable, and hopefully in a couple years they blow it up, and the Wizards own pick swaps for the Suns. They own their second round picks, and that's how this deal is going to work out. So very happy for Brad. I'm so much happier now that the Wizards aren't paying that. But you got to give credit where it's due. Bradley Beal, third year running, wins the Bradley Beal Worst Contract of the Year award. So shout out to Brad. And I mean, I think Bradley Beal is going to be a lock for this award for the next couple of years, unless, the Wizards give $150 million to Davis Bertans. Then I think maybe Brad will be off the hook there. Davis Bertans, also a former winner of the Worst Contract of the Year award, when the Wizards were looking to trade him a couple years ago. So that's the first award to Bradley Beal. So shout out to Brad. Hopefully he kills it in the playoffs. But now we move on to one of my also favorite awards. It's the LiAngelo Ball Shoplifter of the Year award. And I'm sure you can guess who it goes to. It goes to none other than Ryan Rollins. I hope the Target shampoo and all the other items that he didn't feel like paying for was worth it, because I thought he had a real future in this league. I thought he had a future with the Wizards. And he allowed Jared Butler to take that from him after he got waived. So look, very disappointing for I'm not only Ryan Rollins for doing something like that, but for the Wizards, who, invested assets, pretty much added that 57th pick in the draft in order to, I'm sure, get PBJ and Rollins in the package, which turned out to be Trayce Jackson-Davis, which, is a great pick for the Warriors. He looks solid. But the Shoplifter of the Year award goes to Ryan Rollins. Disappointing end to his Wizards tenure for not only the fan base, but I'm sure for Ryan Rollins in the front office as well. Thought that could be a really good partnership. Best Teammate Award. This goes to Anthony Gill for, I think, the fourth year running. He's been in DC for 4 years. He's won it every year. He'll probably continue to win it. And it's crazy because I never met him, but nonetheless, you can just tell how genuine of a person he is. And how respected. I think he won some humanitarian award for like the second or third year in a row, given out by the Wizards. So clearly just a great dude on and off the court. And yeah, that's why he's got best teammate. And then moving on, the Jordan Goodwin Award. This goes to a G Leaguer that has grinded his way, earned his way from the G League to the NBA, stuck around in the NBA, and eventually signed an NBA standard contract. Obviously named after Jordan Goodwin, who did this last year for the Wizards. And this goes to Jared Butler. And look, Jared Butler averaged 10 points per game, 5 assists per game over the last month of the season when Tyus Jones was out, and he was the primary backup behind Poole. Court vision is top tier, defense is top tier. And I can't wait to see what he does in the future in terms of, This is a guy that I wanted to sign in the summer league. And for him to come in here and prove me so right as to why the Wizards should have given him a chance, it's special, and it's nice to see someone like that who goes, later in the draft, and because of a heart condition, works his way back into the league, and now looks like he can be the Wizards' backup point guard for the foreseeable future. So very happy with Jared Butler, and he's very, very deserved of that Jordan Goodwin award for a G Leaguer who grinds his way to the top and earns that NBA deal. Next is best and worst front office moves of the season. I'll start with the positives. The best offensive front office move this season is easily the Bradley Beal trade. And look, you could have traded Bradley Beal for a bag of donuts, and this would have been still the best front office move because this is a move that needed to happen the last 3 years, and the Wizards and their front office decided to be stubborn and think that a team with Bradley Beal and Kristaps Porzingis and Kyle Kuzma could dethrone any of the main super teams in the league, let alone make the play-in tournament, which clearly they couldn't do. And coaching had a lot to do with that, but they needed to move on from him at some point. And this front office came in and said, "This is the first move we're going to do. I don't know why you haven't done this earlier. We're moving on from Brad." And they did that. And like I said, they didn't need to get some unbelievable return for this to look like a great move, but they did. They got a great return. They got four pick swaps, one in 2024, in 2026, 2028, and 2030. Now, I would assume the 2024 and 26 swaps won't be utilized because the Suns are going to be competing in those years and the Wizards are going to be tanking, which is fine. However, I don't think the Suns will be competing at the level they are in 20 and 30. They'll pretty much be fucked if they don't win the championship. And the Wizards will hopefully be good in those years. So, like the Thunder, they'll be, one of the best teams in the East. The Thunder obviously in the West, but one of the best teams in their conference, and also have a boatload of draft picks and good draft capital to build off of and really create that solid foundation for a contending team. So those pick swaps are great. You got 5 second-round picks. You got Landry Shamet. You got Chris Paul. Now you eventually moved on from and got Jordan Poole out of those deals. And look, Jordan Poole might not be the world's greatest player, but you still were able to get a positive asset out of it. I mean, CP3 was going to be traded, no matter, or not traded, but he was going to be moved maybe for a second round pick, or you could have waived him and got nothing in return. But you decided to move on from him. You got Ryan Rollins, who obviously didn't work out, but you got Jordan Poole and Patrick Baldwin Jr., who obviously have a certain amount of upside. And then you got a protected 2030 first round pick. You picked up a second round pick. You got assets for someone that you were going to waive off of an already existing trade for Bradley Beal. So look, all of that, in itself, just trading Brad makes this easily the best front office move. But the ability to take a old 38-year-old CP3, who you were going to waive anyway, and then parlay that into Jordan Poole, who obviously didn't have the season you expected, but looked pretty solid towards the end of the season. That is a good proactive front office move. And that's why it's easily my favorite of the entire offseason. Now, I had some trouble narrowing down the worst front office move. And that's not to say that there was a lot, but there were two that really haven't looked good. And I think one is a counterpart, or one only is bad because of the other move. So I feel like I have to mention both of them. And that's the KP trade, which you basically traded Kristaps Porzingis to the Boston Celtics for Muscala, Gallinari, and Tyus Jones, who was in that third team, and a second-round pick. You traded that second-round pick for a future second-round pick, so that's pretty much a wash. And then you traded Muscala and Gallinari to Detroit for Marvin Bagley and Isaiah Livers. You cut Isaiah Livers, so basically for Marvin Bagley, and you get Tyus Jones, who's a free agent at the end of the season, and decide not to trade him. Look, if the Wizards had moved Tyus Jones to the deadline, this KP move wouldn't look as bad. You could have even gotten 3 second-round picks and maybe like a salary filler, and I would have said, okay, it's okay, it's a little better. Obviously, a first would have been great, But to not trade Tyus Jones, that to me is the most confusing, and that's the worst front office move this season. Because I don't view Tyus Jones as a long-term answer here. I mean, you just gave Jared Butler a standard contract, non-guaranteed at that, but I'm sure you'll rework it in the offseason. You have Jordan Poole under contract for the next 3 to 4 years at $30 plus million dollars per year. He is a point guard now. He's clearly your starter, and you have Jared Butler backing him up, and you might draft the point guard in the draft. So where does Tyus Jones fit into this? He doesn't. He's 28 years old, nearly 29, and he doesn't fit the Wizards timeline, let alone they have a logjam at point guard already with Butler and Poole. So why would you re-sign him? And that's fine. Don't re-sign Tyus Jones. But move him at least. He was probably the most highly touted point guard, apart from Deontay Murray and D'Angelo Russell, on the block. And you had a lot of teams like Minnesota, like Philly, that needed, backup point guard play that would have probably given you a couple seconds for him, and you decided to hold out for a first. That's fair. But when you know you can't get a first, move him for literally anything. Not only would it have opened up more minutes at a like an earlier time for Poole at point guard and for Butler at point guard, but you would have gotten something for him. And he's a free agent. He's gonna walk for free, I would assume. And look, the only thing that can make this work, that make this right, is if you sat down, you're like, all right, we're gonna sign and trade Tyus this offseason. And that'll give us more flexibility to maybe get a first, maybe get something that we want, but we're gonna try to sign and trade him. And if they sign and trade him and they get something for him, that's fine. I didn't need the picks now. If you get picks at any point for Tyus Jones, that's fine. Works out for me. But if you don't and you let him go for free, that means that you traded Kristaps Porzingis to the Boston Celtics for Marvin Bagley, 70-game rental of Tyus Jones, and a second-round pick that you eventually swapped for a different second-round pick. So a second-round pick, 70 games of Tyus Jones and Marvin Bagley for Kristaps Porzingis. And look, KP could have walked for free. He could have declined that player option and just signed with Boston, but the numbers wouldn't have worked. The Celtics needed to do a sign and trade, so he would have just signed elsewhere. However, that doesn't mean or make it better in the fact that the Wizards essentially got nothing for Porzingis. I'm happy that he's doing well and might win a ring in Boston, but we got to look out for ourselves first. And if that's the outlook a year later on that KP trade, then you clearly did something wrong. So the KP trade would probably be the worst front office move, but I would say what makes that trade as bad as it is now is the fact that they decided to not move Tyus at the deadline for some draft capital or young talent. So the Tyus not trading him is the worst front office move. I feel like that's pretty the consensus amount around Wizards Twitter is not trading Tyus has been one of the worst, or not the worst, front office move of the year. But look, that KP trade does go hand in hand with the Tyus move, so you got to talk about them in the same light. So look, best front office move, the Brad trade, worst one, not trading Tyus Jones at the deadline and letting him pretty much probably walk for free in during free agency. Moving on, the Shaqton moment of the year. Shaqton, a fool, obviously, segment made famous by NBA on TNT with Shaq. It's the Jordan Poole, the Kyle Kuzma lob in Memphis, just to put the cherry on top of such an embarrassing effort. I think they cut the lead to like 8, and this could have cut the lead down from like 6 to 4. They had a fast break with like 5 minutes left in the fourth. Jordan Poole lobs it up to Kyle Kuzma, or Kuz lobbed it to Poole, I don't know who. But the guy who caught the lob caught it, landed in bounds, and didn't shoot it, and then took a step and lost the ball out of bounds. Just one of the worst sequences. And then I think an 8-0 run by the Grizzlies. Wizards down 12 with 3 minutes left. Game's over. It was a 10-point swing when it shouldn't have been. It was one of the worst plays of the season. And there was a lot of bad plays, but this was easily the most embarrassing play of the season. The Vucevic missed wide open dunk is definitely an honorable mention for the Shaqton moment, but the bad lob from JP to Kuz in Memphis is definitely up there, and that's what wins the award for me. The service award for enduring 3 years of Wizards basketball goes to both Kyle Kuzma and Anthony Gill. 3 years, last 3 years in the Wizards organization, you've gone 85 and 161 over that span. And Anthony Gill is pretty much, you're that bad and you're not playing. You're just pretty much a practice guy. And look, respect to Anthony Gill for being the first guy off the bench during every timeout. Nobody says a bad word about him. I already, pretty much talked all about him for best teammate, but I'm gonna talk about him again. It's not easy to keep losing in the NBA, especially when you're a guy that doesn't play that many minutes. Always ready when his name gets called. Looked decent over the last 4 or 5 games when, no healthy centers were available and he was starting against Gobert and some of the best centers in the league. And Kyle Kuzma as well for sticking out the last 3 years. And look, a lot of people have their opinions on Kyle Kuzma, whether they don't like his game, whether they think he isn't a winning player, whether, they think that Wizards should move on from Kyle Kuzma. But Kuz, you got to respect him for sticking it out. He clearly wants to win here because he could have gotten traded to the Mavericks. He could have, competed for a title with Luka and Kyrie. But he declined that trade. He said, "No, I want to do it the right way. I want to see it out in DC." And look, people could think he has many different reasons for that in terms of, wanting to be the number one option, wanting to be that go-to guy and all that. However, you got to respect a guy that wants to be here. For a market in DC that has had trouble attracting big name free agents and good players, for him to want to stay, even after experiencing the worst year in Wizards basketball ever, you got to respect that. So the service award for 3+ years of being in the Wizards org goes to Kyle Kuzma and Anthony Gill. And look, this last award is a special one just because obviously Wizards Twitter is a special place for me. That's where I get to engage with a lot of Wizards fans. Look, I'm from the New Jersey, Philadelphia area. I go to college in Pennsylvania. There's not many Wizards fans near me. So to be able to have like fun dialogue with the Wizards fans and people on Twitter, that's the highlights of my week. Getting to just talk about my favorite team with a lot of my favorite people now that I've met on Twitter. So this is the last award of the Teddies. And this is a special one. The Teddy for Wizards Twitter MVP for this season goes to my guy Will Clayton. And look, I've already said a lot of good things when Will came on the pod, but Will is so positive within the Wizards community. Obviously we share a passion for how much Denny Avdia stock we both hold. Will's probably the biggest Denny fan I've ever met, and I'm a big Denny person myself, but Will watches pretty much every game, and that's, look, I know in a season that's like this, not a lot of people have watched every game, and I'm not here to say, and flex on everybody that I watched every game. It's honestly pretty upsetting and pretty sad that I've watched all 82 games of a 15-win Wizards team. But Will has stuck it out, and you can tell, he's still with it. He's trying to find the positives. He's posting Denny's stats. He's posting everyone's, highlights of the season, making some really good takes, informative takes, creating good, civilized dialogue on Wizards Twitter. And I feel like everyone can kind of share in the sentiment that he's kind of a beacon of light in what was a really disappointing season for the Wiz. So really wanted to shout out Will Clayton for just, being a bit more positive and being a little bit of a light in what was a tough season. So shout out to Will. Also want to shout out the DMV5 podcast. They had me on as well. They're up and coming in the Wizards content creation scene. I really am excited to see what they do and like what they're doing. So they're the Wizards Twitter newcomer of the year, the DMV5 group. You know who you are. There's a lot of you in there, Jack and all you guys. So shout out to you. But that's going to do it for the first annual Teddy Awards. Hope you guys enjoyed it. This was supposed to be a little bit more of a fun episode, kind of, poking fun at some people, be a little bit fun in what was a really, tough season to endure. But hopefully you liked it. Let me know if you have any awards of your own that I can hopefully, add to next year when I'm here, on April 15th or 16th of 2025. Hopefully, where the Wizards have maybe won, 5 to 6 more games. Obviously, bad enough to get a chance at Cooper Flagg, but still pretty bad. Hopefully, Bilal has, blossomed next season. Hopefully, Denny and all those guys, Jordan Poole, Kyle Kuzma, they're all playing very well towards the end of next season as well. So that's gonna do it for the first edition of the Teddy Awards. Before I go, I want to kind of do some housekeeping and make sure that all you guys that are listening are informed on kind of what went down over the last 2 to 3 days of the regular season, why the Wizards what picks they have, what picks they could get, certain things like that. So essentially, I'll start here. The Wizards lottery odds are as follows. For the first pick, they have a 14% chance. So do the Pistons at one, and the third team, I think, is a tie between Charlotte and Portland. So they'll have to do a coin flip, but one of those teams will get a 14% chance as well. They have a 13.4% chance at the second pick, 12.7% the chance at the third pick, 12% at the fourth, 27.5% at the fifth, and a 20% at the sixth. 0% chance to go anywhere from 7 to 14, so they're guaranteed to be top six. A little bit of, I did some research. The team, fun fact, the team with the second worst record in the NBA the last 3 years has won the first overall pick in the draft lottery. I'm not saying the Wizards are gonna, but I'm saying that's some pretty good company to be in, and it bodes well for the Wizards in terms of their lottery hopes. Moving forward, the Wizards own the 26th pick in the draft officially from that Daniel Gafford trade. It was a very confusing thing. It's like four different teams. The Wizards get the second worst pick. It's weird, but basically, the Thunder and the Clippers were between those two, and whoever finished better in the standings, the Wizards got the other person's pick. So because the Thunder were, I think, the second best team in the league this season, their pick conveys to somebody else. But because the Clippers were worse than them, the Wizards get the Clippers pick, and the Clippers are 26th in the league. So the Wizards will get the 26th pick. All those picks aren't determined by the playoffs. They're determined before the playoffs in terms of regular season record, which is why you can lock in right now that the Wizards will have the 26th pick. Now, in terms of second round picks, I believe the Phoenix Suns pick, if I recall correctly, the Wizards own their second round pick this season. Obviously unprotected, it's a second round pick, but Phoenix is currently in a three-way regular season tie with Milwaukee and New Orleans. So that's going to be determined by a coin flip. So basically, you have the Clippers at 26 and then 25-24. Anywhere from 21 and 23 is where the Suns finish. So the Wizards' second round pick will be anywhere from the 51st overall pick to the 53rd overall pick. And that'll basically just be determined by a coin flip to break the tie between those three teams. So anywhere from 51 to 53. And obviously they have their first round pick, which is top six guaranteed. So basically the Wizards will have a top six pick. They will have the 26th pick, and they will have a pick from 51 to 53. They don't currently own their own second round pick from a trade a couple of years ago, which sucks because it would have been 32. But look, that's gonna do it for this episode of the first annual Teddy Awards, end of season awards. Hope all you guys enjoyed. Let me know what you thought, some feedback on the award show. Hopefully you thought some of the awards were funny. Hopefully you were happy with some of my selections. Obviously, feel free to let me know if you've absolutely hated them or if you think I'm stupid for some of them. I love the feedback. You don't have to be nice about it. Just tell it to me straight. I can take it. But look, again, appreciate all you guys for listening. And I posted about this yesterday after the game, but I just want to say thanks to all you guys for following along and interacting with me on Twitter. It's the highlights of my day, just getting to talk about the Wizards, even though they suck, with a bunch of like-minded people that care about the team as much as I do and want to see them succeed as much as I do. And none of the stuff in terms of the content creation, the podcast, the articles for Bullets Forever, even the job for Bullets Forever, that wouldn't be possible without all of you guys interacting, sharing my stuff, liking all of the stuff I put out, listening to the pod, interacting with the articles. That might seem like it's a pretty minuscule thing, but all of that means a lot. And I know all you guys that do it consistently, and the support means the world. So again, thank you so much for the support throughout this season. Gonna obviously continue to do at least an episode a week throughout the off season. Really hone it in with the draft coverage starting next week. I'm gonna have Ben Pfeiffer on, who's really into draft coverage, one of the most knowledgeable, smart dudes I've ever seen. I followed him for a while about the draft, so I'm gonna have him on the pod. Obviously, I'll probably have Matt Bodorno on as well, who's a draft guru of in and of itself. And then next week, I also want to do a Wizards offseason preview just to get you guys a little bit more knowledgeable about what to expect in terms of key dates and stuff like that. So again, I thank you so much for all your support this season. It means the world, and that's going to do it for this episode. Go Wiz.